The following presentation is brought to you by The Realm Network.
The Bob Seska Show, presented by BubbleGenius.com.
Hey folks, Bob here with this week's Bubble Genius Showcase Item of the Week. If the Twitter toddler in the White House has you completely stressed out, head on over to BubbleGenius.com and pick up their exclusive Republican voodoo doll featuring the face and body of our cartoon dictator. This item is only available for a limited time, so get yours now, only $25 at BubbleGenius.com, with a third of the proceeds going to support the campaigns of resistance candidates across the country. Plus, if you use our promo code BOBC at checkout, you'll get 15% off your entire order only at BubbleGenius.com. And now, let the cartoons begin.
Broadcasting from Resistance Headquarters, relentlessly fighting back against the clown dictator and his regime of deplorables.
Never give up, never surrender.
This is the Bob Seska Show, presented by BubbleGenius.com.
Very well, where do I begin? My father was a relentlessly self-improving boulangerie owner from Belgium with low-grade narcolepsy and a penchant for buggery. My mother was a 15-year-old French prostitute named Chloe with webbed feet. My father would womanize, he would drink, he would make outrageous claims like he invented the question mark. Sometimes he would accuse chestnuts of being lazy, the sort of general malaise that only the genius possess and the insane lament. My childhood was typical. Summers in Rangoon, luge lessons. In the spring, we'd make meat helmets. When I was insolent, I was placed in a burlap bag and beaten with reeds. Pretty standard, really. At the age of 12, I received my first scribe. At the age of 14, a Zoroastrian named Vilma ritualistically shaved my testicles. At the age of 18, I went off to evil medical school. At the age of 25, I took up tap dancing. I wanted to be a quadruple threat. An actor, a dancer.
You know, we have to stop.
Bob Seska!
If you vote for me, all of your wildest dreams will come true.
The Bob Seska Show!
God damn it! Hello, Bob.
Hello, Rachel. We're getting underway a little bit late today.
God damn it!
And I,
The interwebs is a series of tubes.
It's not a big truck. Yeah, we had some internet problems. Internet problems going on today, thanks to Comcast. Thank you, Comcast.
F you.
And by thank you...
They won't be sponsoring the show anytime soon.
That's right. By thank you, I mean something else.
F you.
Mm-hmm. Okay, welcome to the show today. Lots of stuff to talk about, but before we get into it, you just heard her voice right there. It's Jackie Schechner today, right?
Hello world, is the news that she's bringing. Come on, get Jackie.
God damn it.
All my stories is what she's singing. We bring you Jackie.
F you.
Come on, it's Jackie.
Yes, indeed. It's Jackie Schechner. Welcome.
Thank you. I like the little insertions into the song. It's more how I'm feeling.
I can't help it. I'm in one of those moods. You know, I was just saying right before we got started, Jackie, that that Chez and I were very similar in so many ways. And one of the ways is we don't deal with tech problems easily. One thing that we would both do whenever there was a tech situation, it's one of those things where I just get almost overly angry at the tech problem, partly because I don't understand what the problem is. So therefore, it's just so infuriating. And I get really, really pissed off and just like that.
Hey, Grandpa, we'll get the blinking 12 o'clock on your VCR fix.
I know. That's really the way it is here because, and then it's impossible to find the phone number for the tech support. And then it just, I'm not one of these people who tries to do the online chat because then that's even more difficult. But anyway, there's so many things going on. I don't want to spend the whole show complaining about Comcast and the internet connection here. But
speaking of technology, let me just bring this up because I thought it was quite extraordinary. Did you see this morning when Trump made his announcement about the VA and how they were making all this great progress at the VA for for patients at the VA, and they're like, we now have an app.
Oh, really?
And we have telemedicine. I mean, it was like, this is not news to anybody under the age of 80.
There's an app. Good golly. What an amazing piece of technology Donald Trump has at his disposal.
Yeah, like if you've been to the doctor any time in the last like 5 years, yes, you can see something up on a screen and you can diagnose what's going on. I mean, the technology was so basic. I mean, unless I'm missing something here, but it looked like he was Skyping with a patient in a room with a bunch of nurses, and it was so rudimentary.
Yeah.
And somehow this is going to fix all of the problems the VA is allegedly having.
But don't you know, it's the best app. It is the greatest app that's ever been created. Hands down, there's no better app. This I can tell you, believe me. But you know what, Jackie?
Trump looked bored and lost. I mean, it was just an embarrassment all around.
I'm so glad. You know what? Weirdly, this is weird to say, but you know, I'm so glad we got started late. Otherwise, we wouldn't have had this story that broke just as our internet went down here at the studio. But this is pretty amazing. The Wall Street Journal reporting right now, special counselor Mueller impanels Washington grand jury in Russia probe. This is huge. This is huge news because we haven't heard about any official grand jury being impaneled in all of this to investigate Trump Russia. And this indicates that we've now moved to the next stage.
Jeffrey Toobin was explaining, I think, that this means now that he can get sworn testimony, that Mueller can now get sworn testimony, and he can hand out indictments if the grand jury finds that there's some there. Right?
Exactly. And this is where we start to also get into the realm of perjury, where certainly the main players in all of this, the main players being like Manafort, Kushner, Trump himself, Don Jr., Mike Flynn, on down the line, Carter Page, some of these Russians and so on, they haven't had to, as far as I can tell, they haven't had to testify under oath. There hasn't been any reporting along those lines. But now they can be subpoenaed. They're going to have to testify. Then they'll be called back to testify again and again and again. And this is where the legal jeopardy and the legal bills, especially for some of the lower paid Trump White House staffers, really begin to stack up. According to the Wall Street Journal here, special counsel Robert Mueller has impaneled a grand jury in Washington to investigate Russia's interference in the 2016 elections, a sign that his inquiry is growing in intensity and entering a new phase, according to people familiar with the matter. The grand jury, which began its work in recent weeks, is a sign that Mr. Mueller's inquiry is ramping up and that it will likely continue for months. Mr. Mueller is investigating Russia's efforts, blah, blah, blah. Spokesman for Mr. Mueller, Joshua Stweev, declined to comment. Moscow has denied seeking to influence the election. This is always funny. I always love bringing up this name. Ty Cobb. Ty Cobb, special counsel to the president with his crazy mustache, said he wasn't aware that Mr. Mueller had started using a new grand jury. Grand jury matters are typically secret, Mr. Cobb said. The White House favors anything that accelerates the conclusion of this work fairly. The White House is committed to fully cooperating with Mr. Mueller. This is all very interesting. So the heat is getting turned up on Trump and the White House. So here we are at the God.
Where did we leave off?
I think it's day 196 of the Trump crisis, and I haven't played this music in a while, so I thought I'd bring this back. There's so many things to get into. We got to talk about in addition to this grand jury being impaneled, we've also got Stephen Miller. Miller decided to emerge from his cave to talk in public about legislation, this new immigration push that the Trump White House is going to pursue that will go absolutely nowhere. I mean, make no mistake, whatever they're talking about as far as immigration goes in the White House, not going to happen. What Stephen Miller was discussing throughout the day yesterday in the press room was just awful,
and the way he was doing it was awful.
Yeah. In fact, I've got some new Stephen Miller music. This is pretty much perfect, and this is just because he's so creepy. This is new Stephen Miller music for the show. I think this works out really well. Okay, so Stephen Miller decided to just get into the press room and perform for his boss, Donald Trump, yesterday. And it went about as well as you can imagine. If you haven't seen any of the clips, Stephen Miller is maybe the creepiest guy in the White House. What is it about Trump and the people who surround Trump? They all look like comic book supervillains or something.
They're like dead behind the eyes, too.
Yeah.
Right? There's no like depth of soul. There's no compassion. There's no warmth.
Right. They're all like Dick Tracy villains or something, you know, whether it's Steve Bannon or Trump himself is the most bizarre of the group. But then they shove Stephen Miller out there, who just looks like he's been spending too much time with the One Ring. You know, it's like he's starting to transform into Gollum a little bit, don't you think?
Yeah, you don't want to pick on somebody's physical appearance, but because he's such a terrible human being, I feel like it's okay a little bit.
Oh yeah, of course
but
it
it's
is.
Like the receding hairline yeah. and like the condescending smirk.
Yeah. Well, he's, you know, like all of the Trump people, they're all bullies. So I have no problem whatsoever with just going there, just making, just relentlessly going ad hominem and just winding in all of their weird quirks and appearances and so on. But yeah, I mean, Miller is just this expressionless golem. I mean, if he was actually capable of human emotion, he'd be a little better to deal with, but he's not, and he's terrible. And
yeah, but he looked like he was getting off a little bit yesterday. I mean, there was something like really sadistic about the way that he was fighting the media in that press room.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because he took on these arguments that weren't actually factually accurate. And he went on a tear to try to make himself sound like he had the upper hand, especially with Jim Acosta. I mean, that was
right.
It was embarrassing.
Yeah, the exchange with Jim Acosta was especially bizarre. And it's, you know why it's strange? It's strange to actually see a troll in person.
Somebody wrote on Twitter that he was the personification of a comment on Breitbart.
That's a completely accurate description of him. He's like an internet troll. He's like a Twitter troll who you actually end up confronting. Mm-hmm. And worse, yeah. He's like a libertarian internet troll, which are the most insufferable of all the internet trolls. I think Barack Obama once made the comment that libertarians are just Republicans who you have to block on Twitter. That's exactly right. And that's the case with Stephen Miller. Here's a little bit of his exchange with Robert Costa from Jim Acosta from CNN, yeah. Right?
On the subject at hand, yes.
What you're proposing, or what the president is proposing here, does not sound like it's in keeping with American tradition when it comes to immigration. The Statue of Liberty says, give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free. Doesn't say anything about speaking English or being able to be a computer programmer. Aren't you trying to change what it means to be an immigrant coming into this country, if you're telling them you have to speak English? Can't people learn how to speak English when they get here?
Well, first of all, right now, it's a requirement that to be naturalized, you have to speak English. So the notion that speaking English wouldn't be a part of our immigration systems would be actually very ahistorical.
Oh, shut up. God damn it. You know what?
God damn it!
This is what I'm talking about. Jim Acosta said nothing about becoming a citizen. Just talking about immigrating to the into the United States. That's all it is. And to say that you can't, when you're coming to this country, that you have to speak English before you step off the boat, that's just insane.
Mm-hmm.
And it's you know, I've been following this subject. And of course, it links in with making English the official language of the United States, which Republicans have been wanting to do that for a long, long time, just based on stupid, nearsighted bigotry and xenophobia.
Yeah, there's no substance to it in terms of how it would impact our country other than just people wanting other people to look and sound like them.
Exactly. And, you know, I was living in eastern Pennsylvania for a while, and one of the things that was being hotly debated locally there was whether or not to have bilingual ballots for voting. And my concern always was that if you don't have bilingual ballots, there are people who are living in the United States legally who need the extra time to learn how to speak English clearly and to be able to read it and to be able sure. to be fluent in it. So you can't, you have to give people a chance to adapt to being in the United States and to speaking English and to, you know, the whole idea of forcing them to learn English before they can use any services inside the United States, before they can cast a ballot, before they can read a road sign. It just doesn't make any sense.
Flip it around. Imagine that you're an American citizen who wants to go live in a foreign country.
Yeah.
Flip it around. I mean, that's the easiest way to look at it. You want to go live in Spain. You want to go live in France. You want to go live in China. You have to learn that language fluently enough to participate day to day in order to have any sort of benefit from that society. I mean, that's absurd.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And so it makes no sense. And in the case of this back and forth between Stephen Miller and Jim Acosta, Stephen Miller is, of course, taking a question and turning it into something else. The question has to do with people just coming into the country for the first time, not becoming citizens. Mm-hmm. So that, wait, you're being ahistorical.
Secondly, I don't want to get off into a whole thing about history here, but the Statue of Liberty is a symbol of liberty enlightening the world. It's a symbol of American liberty lighting the world. The poem that you're referring to that was added later is not actually part of the original Statue of Liberty. But more fundamentally,
that sounds like some national park revisionism.
Right.
It's a white nationalist talking point, from what I understand. It's something that's been circulating online for a while as a white nationalist thing.
Yeah, yeah.
That poem was added later, and that's not what the Statue of Liberty is all about.
Of course, that makes no sense whatsoever. That it's completely irrelevant when the poem was added. The Colossus poem was added to the Statue of Liberty. It's like saying the Battle of Gettysburg is irrelevant because the Gettysburg Address was delivered months after the battle took place. You know, these two things are, of course, connected, and they add meaning, and now it that becomes canon, that the Statue of Liberty is not only a symbol of liberty, but it's also a symbol of liberty projecting out to all people who want to come into the United States and be free citizens of the world.
And think about how despicable that is, that he's standing at the podium in the White House briefing room talking about how the Statue of Liberty, the poem on the Statue of Liberty that we all have come to know as a representation of what that stands for, isn't really that.
It's one of those things, too, where they know they can get away with that. They know that they can talk out their ass like Stephen Miller is clearly doing.
It's the least egregious thing we'll hear all day.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, Donald Trump does it all the time. Just talks out of his ass, and then the 35% or the 38%, whoever the people who are still diehard, still supporting Donald Trump, will just, of course, suck it down like Coca-Cola. They just absorb all of that. And, of course, that's now going to be true. That's now going to be absolutely true. Like, the Statue of Liberty, oh, that has nothing to do with immigration. Never mind, you know, the century and a half that people have been coming into the country and seeing the Statue of Liberty, and the Statue of Liberty becoming this symbol of entering the United States and entering a nation where you can be free and you're not repressed, whether it has to do with your speech or your religion or so forth. This is something that is deeply symbolic to a lot of people. And we've always talked about the Statue of Liberty as something that was welcoming to immigrants. You know,
I mean, Stephen Miller's got, I mean, he's got a lot of experience with immigrants and having been raised in Santa Monica, California. And,
right.
I mean, you know, I not to disparage Santa Monica, but, you know, it's not exactly like he's spent his life being impacted by a wave of immigrants. And I mean, look, he's not the guy. He's not the guy standing up for immigrants in this country. So this, like, faux, like, concern that he, I mean, you didn't hear it in that clip, you'll hear it later on, but he attacks Acosta, pretending to be the defender of immigrants. It's just, the whole thing is such a charade. It's like somebody finally let Steven out of his hole and he went on a tear right. and then climbs back into it. It's
he doesn't like them hobbitses. He gets angry and those hobbitses want to come into the United States.
Your statement's also shockingly ahistorical in another respect, too. Which is, if you look at the history of immigration, it's actually ebbed and flowed. We've had periods of very large waves, followed by periods of less immigration and more immigration.
You know what this is called? I just came up with a word for this. This is called bigot-splaining.
Oh, I like that one. Like mansplaining. Or, yeah.
Yeah, because in this case, it's big explaining. Stephen Miller, I mean, even going back to college, he has been a guy who has been trying to demonize anyone who isn't like him. And this is something, this is his area of concentration in the White House. This is what Stephen Miller does. All the language on the Muslim ban, all the stuff regarding immigration. This is all material that Stephen Miller has had a direct association with and has been one of the primary architects of. And so this is something that is not new for Stephen Miller, demonizing foreigners. You know, this is... This is something that Stephen Miller loves doing. This is
his the dog whistle, is what you're saying.
Exactly. This is his wheelhouse. So what we're hearing now is because Stephen Miller has spent most of his adult life working on this, now he's going to bigot-splain to Jim Acosta. He's still talking to Jim Acosta, by the way.
And during the you've had
a period of immigration right now, the president wants to build a wall, bring about a sweeping change to the
immigration. Surely, Jim, you don't actually think that a wall affects green card policy. You couldn't possibly believe that, do you? Actually, the notion that you actually think immigration is at a historic low, the foreign-born population of the United States today, Jim,
talking about how border crossing.
Do you really? I want to be serious, Jim. Do you really at CNN not know the difference between green card policy and illegal immigration?
Sir, you really don't know that. Cuban immigrant. He came to this country in 1962, right before the Cuban Missile Crisis, and obtained a green card. Yes, people who immigrate to this country can eventually. People who
Jim, as a factual question,
Jackie.
Bob.
this guy's such a dick.
You dick.
He really, really is. God damn it. All right.
Do obtain a green card at some point. They do it through a lot of hard work. And yes, they may learn English as a second language later on in life.
So, but
this
Jim,
whole this whole notion of, well, they could learn, you know, they have to learn English before they get to the United States. Are we just going to bring in people from Great Britain and Australia?
Jim, actually, I have to honestly say, I am shocked at your statement that you think that only people from Great Britain and Australia would know English.
He didn't say that.
It reveals your cosmopolitan bias to a shocking degree.
All right, there
that
it
in
is.
Your mind. No, this is an amazing. This is an amazing moment. This is
cosmopolitan. All right,
now, it's cosmopolitan bias from the guy raised in Santa Monica.
But you know what? I don't think
cosmopolitan bias.
I don't think this is something that Stephen Miller is saying with that specific meaning. Like, I don't think Stephen Miller is saying this to connote something like, oh, well, you're from New York, or you're from Washington, or you're from Los Angeles, so you're therefore you're out of touch with
Is it a buzzword?
The rest of us. Yeah, well, it's been circulating around Twitter, this old phrase known as rootless cosmopolitan. It's an old insult, and it is a little bit better understood in the original Russian. And this is an actual thing. Rootless cosmopolitan was an old Soviet phrase to describe Jews. That's an actual thing. This is obviously a dog whistle of some sort to white nationalists and people like that.
If I had to guess, I would say it was sort of a knock on people who leave their hometown to go live in a big city.
That could be, too. I mean, it's entirely possible that either of those...
But the fact that it has some sort of anti-Semitic origin, at least according to what you've read, is not surprising at all coming from Stephen Miller.
Yes, of course. So there's... I mean, this is something to mull over, something to a little bit to think about. But he uses it a couple times. We've got the first one here out of the way. We'll get into the second one and then move along.
It's an amazing moment that you think only people from Great Britain or Australia would speak English is so insulting to millions of hardworking immigrants who do speak English from all over the world. Jim, have you honestly never met an immigrant from another country who speaks English outside of Great Britain and Australia? Is that your personal experience?
Of course there are people who come in.
But that's
not
what he said.
That's not at all what he said.
Oh my God, no, not at all.
I mean, poor Jim. That is not at all what he said. What he was trying to do was defend people who come to this country not having English as their first language and saying that they absolutely deserve to be a part of this country. Yep. They come here, they work hard. As they learn English, obviously that'll become part of their repertoire. But having English as your first language is not a requirement. That's what Jim was saying. Like, why should English as a first language be a requirement? And he used Britain, Great Britain, and Australia as examples.
Yeah.
And Stephen went to town in a totally bizarre direction.
Right. Well, this is where you start to smash your face against a brick wall when you're talking to a troll.
It hurts your brain, doesn't it?
Yeah, just to make any sense of any of this crap.
Yeah, it does. It hurts your brain.
Yeah,
and what a waste of a valuable White House time to have this moron up there trying to debate his way through something that's not even true. I mean, and on a policy that'll never happen.
What a
complete waste of time.
I'm wondering how well Kelly really is operating in that White House when it comes to establishing some sort of discipline and order in there, because so far, not very good. It's not, he's not doing a very good job if this was his task to square things away inside the White House.
He let Trump tweet about insulting Congress today in favor of Russia.
Yeah.
I mean, how is that discipline?
It's not.
Like, maybe you shouldn't insult your own Congress in favor of Russia. Like,
yeah.
Maybe that would be a good way to go.
That's a good start. Because everyone's talking about how... Now, maybe John Kelly will keep Trump from tweeting obnoxious things. And, of course, that's not doesn't appear to be working so well, yeah. Does it? And
how many times do we have to talk about the possible reset or the more presidential or
yep.
the get him under control or that? Like, it's not going to happen, folks.
Yep. It happens every single time. Every time there's some sort of change in the White House, this is where he's finally going to have some discipline. This is where he's going to finally become presidential. And that never works out. It never works out that way.
He's
turns
just
into,
not that into us.
No, it just turns into a disaster. Okay. So, as we work through our technical problems on the show today, by the way, we also have lots more to talk about. There's like 12 different transcripts of Trump acting like an idiot. We have to get to.
Oh, goody!
There's the Wall Street Journal interview. There's these transcripts came out today of these phone calls with Peña Nieto and Prime Minister Turnbull of Australia. Where again,
Enrique and Malcolm?
Yeah, exactly. They're Trump's best friends, don't you know? But first, we're going to talk about the Amazon link at bobsesca.com. And we're going to do something that we did on Tuesday that was a lot of fun with Jody mm-hmm. Hamilton here. We did Stump the Amazon Link, and if you missed Tuesday's show, I set it up this way. Remember on the old Tonight Show where they used to do Stump the Band?
Mm-hmm.
And they used to blurt out song titles to see if Doc Severinsen and the orchestra could actually play those songs.
Okay.
And it was a bit that they used to do. So I thought it'd be fun to do Stump the Amazon Link, because Amazon.com has almost literally everything. I mean, it's kind of amazing how many things that... you can get right at Amazon.com. It's basically a one-stop shop for everything. I can't believe I just used the phrase one-stop shop. But what can I say?
I love that. What else is Amazon?
So here
it's
I'm going.
One-stop shop.
I've gone to bobsesca.com. Just beneath the logo on the main page of the site, there's in all caps, it says Amazon link. I'm going to click that link. It's going to take me right to the front page of Amazon.com. And now I'm going to type in the name of a product which Jackie will name, like just a random item, maybe not something with a brand name, but just sort of a thing that we might be able to find at Amazon.com. What do you have for us?
Well, in honor of your internet difficulties today, I want to see if we can find a dial-up modem.
A dial-up modem. Let's see if they have a dial-up modem. Typing in dial-up modem at Amazon.com.
Just go back to basics.
Just go and
totally
back to basics.
Why all this fancy schmancy stuff?
Like a 14.4 or 28.8 modem. Remember
whatever
those things?
Makes the best noise.
Yeah.
That one.
Yeah, right. Or maybe a 56K modem. All right, let's check.
Ooh, 56K.
Here we go. Oh, my God. Here it
is. Talk dirty to me, Bob.
They have the EAS external 56K version 0.92 dial-up USB data / fax modem.
Ooh.
A fax modem. Fantastic.
You had me at fax.
add dial-up internet access and fax modem support to your computer through USB for Windows / Mac OS 6.
How much? How much is this thing going to run me?
Okay, first of all, you can get it through Amazon Prime by Saturday, August 5th for the low price of $18.99.
So if I have, like, emergency fax needs...
That's right. That's right. If your internet goes down, just like it's gone down for me all day today, thanks Comcast, you can go and get yourself a dial-up modem, plug it into your phone input.
Your landline.
Your telephone landline, right? Or you could try, hey, how about US Robotics? USR 5637, 56K USB controller, dial-up external fax modem with voice. For only $52.10.
Do we have a millennial audience at all? Because you realize none of them are going to know what this is. We've just dated ourselves in like the most horrific way.
What is dial-up modem? I don't know. It's from the olden days of the 1990s. Boy, do I remember those days.
Do you want to hear something really sad? I'll just segue to this. Okay. Is that I was reading through a joke book with one of my boyfriend's little kids who is 8 years old.
Yeah.
And there was a joke about a busy signal. And she said... What's that mean?
Oh, no.
Yeah, when you have to explain a busy signal to a child, you know that you're in a whole nother realm.
Oh, we're so old. You know, it'd be like our parents explaining to us what Klondike means in the context of a phone number. What is why do they used to say Klondike in phone numbers? I have no idea.
It's an ice cream bar.
That's right. Amazon.com has it all, and so can you when you go shopping until you're dropping while also supporting this show. All you have to do is go to BobSeska.com instead of Amazon.com. Once you've arrived at the podcast page, just click the all caps Amazon link just beneath the logo on the main page. It takes you directly to the front page of Amazon.com. You go shopping as normal, but if you use our link, we get a small commission from everything you buy. It costs you nothing extra, and it helps support the show. And if you own a small business, be sure to source all of your supplies from Amazon.com. Toner cartridges, backup batteries, paper clips, printer paper, etc. Use our link when you restock your supplies, and don't forget to bookmark it. That's the BobSeska.com Amazon link. It is the only way to shop.
The Bob Seska Show.
The Bob Seska Show, presented by BubbleGenius.com.
Welcome back to today's show. Thank you for joining us. Really, really appreciate it.
I heat up, I can't cool down.
Steve Miller.
Got me spinning round and round.
Yeah, I know. What can I say?
He's single. I think he's seeing anyone.
I know. Imagine, I think every time he appears on TV, can't you see it? Like everyone's panties just flying off. All the women in the press room, their panties just flew right off. That's why
somebody said if you had to be stuck in an elevator with Stephen Miller or Steve Bannon, which one would you choose? I said I'd take the stairs in perpetuity, just to avoid the risk of that ever happening.
That's right. That's eventually if Stephen Miller spends too much time with the One Ring, he'll eventually start to look like Steve Bannon.
Oh God.
Oh.
Steve Bannon looks like he ate Stephen Miller.
Yeah, Steve Bannon looked like he ate Stephen Miller and then had an allergic reaction to Stephen
Miller. Okay, you win on that one. That was amazing. That was amazing.
So the Washington...
He's all like puffy and bloated and red.
Just splotchy. Just the splotchiest man in Washington. Used to be that Bill O'Reilly had the market cornered on being splotchy. And now Steve Bannon comes along, just completely out-splotches anyone else. So he's the king of all splotches.
Splotch factor 10.
I know, Jesus. You know, they've got a guy who plays Steve Bannon on The President Show on Comedy Central. And he looks and acts just like Steve Bannon. It's one of the best impressions I've ever seen. It's certainly better than the SNL impression of Steve Bannon, which is just the Grim Reaper, which in and of itself, yeah. I guess, is a funny joke.
It was like half funny the first time, but now it's like,
yeah.
They could do better.
Right. There's just so much to be done, you know, with the alcoholism and all. But, you know, the problem with the Steve Bannon on The President Show, not splotchy enough.
You gotta up the splotch factor. Too low on the splotchometer. I got it.
More splotches for TV's Steve Bannon. Okay, so the Washington Post published this is a huge story today, published transcripts of Trump's calls to both Peña Nieto, this is back just after the inauguration, and also Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull from Australia. The fascinating aspect of this is not just the way the transcripts make Donald Trump or emphasize Donald Trump's idiocy, as always, but they're coming from the White House staff. These transcripts came from the White House staff.
Yeah.
Someone, and again, reference back to our conversation about John Kelly not doing a very good job with discipline inside the White House. this is someone in the White House continuing to leak. You know, I guess Scaramucci leaving. You know, Scaramucci was going to get all the leakers. So yeah. Maybe it's because Scaramucci.
I don't know. You think Sean Spicer and Reince Priebus are sitting around having a beer, being like, "What should we give the press today?"
See, that's what I'm thinking. Like,
yeah, like they snuck out with something. I mean, Spicer's still hanging around, I think. But
yeah,
I mean, if I were Reince, I'd be giving them everything I had.
Oh, I know, and especially with Scaramucci. I mean, he was only there for 10 days. I would have gathered up as much compromising material as I could to just have it as an insurance policy, knowing how Donald Trump behaves, because Donald Trump will betray everyone around him. Donald Trump destroys everything he touches.
Mm-hmm.
John Kelly will be out before the end of the year.
Because Trump doesn't like to be told what to do. So as much as he says he admires General Kelly, he's general, right? He was a general, Admiral Kelly. What was his rank?
Yeah, general. He's a general. General. Yeah.
Trump. As much as he says he admires him, there's no sense of loyalty to that. And
no
the
way.
Minute Kelly makes him feel small, he's going to run.
That's right. And everyone makes Donald Trump feel small. That's one of his main problems. But we've got lots of interesting quotes here. That came out of this series of transcripts between Trump and Peña Nieto. We're going to start there because the most damning one, and this is where I start to wonder really how brainwashed Trump supporters are, because if they read this quote that I'm about to read here and they still support Donald Trump after seeing this, they're truly brainwashed. I mean, like cult follower status on all of this. Here's Trump. They're talking about the wall. And Trump said to Peña Nieto, again, this
who,
is the...
Who he calls Enrique, by the way.
Enrique, right.
The entire time, the president of Mexico refers to Donald Trump, who has done nothing to earn the title of president,
yeah.
Refers to him as Mr. President the entire time.
Yeah.
And in response to that, the amount of respect that Trump gives to the president of Mexico is to consistently call him Enrique. I'm surprised he didn't call him Ricky.
Yeah. You know, if I was Peña Nieto, what I would have called Donald Trump is Schmoopy. I would have just said, yeah. If he had been calling me Enrique, I'd be like, okay, fine, Schmoopy. I'm calling you Schmoopy from now on. From now on, Mr. President, you are President Schmoopy. I'd be like, no, that's not very tremendous. I'm going to hang up on you. You've gotten all pissy pants all over Peña. All right, here's this transcript. The only thing I will ask, this is Donald Trump speaking. The only thing I will ask you, though, is on the wall. You and I both have a political problem. My people stand up and say, Mexico will pay for the wall. And your people probably say something in a similar but slightly different language. Oh, my God, he's so stupid. But the fact is, we are both in a little bit of a political bind because I have to have Mexico pay for the wall. I have to. I have been talking about it for a 2-year period. By the way, this is really difficult to read, and I'll tell you why. There are no contractions in this. And of course,
yeah, there's also not complete sentences.
Not complete sentences, but you know, Donald Trump is an informal speaker. He doesn't use formal language. By that I'm saying Donald Trump speaks casually and uses contractions. However, there are no contractions in any of this transcript.
It's weird.
Yeah, exactly. It's just so bizarre that he's talking like Commander Data from Star Trek The Next Generation and all of this. It's so weird. I have been talking about it for a 2-year period. And the reason I say they are going to pay for the wall is because Mexico has made a fortune out of the stupidity of U.S. trade representatives. Donald Trump making friends here. They are beating us at trade. He's saying to the Mexican president, they, not you, he's saying they. They are beating us at trade, and they are beating us at the border, and they are killing us with drugs. Now, I know you are not involved with that, but regardless of who is making all the money, billions and billions and billions, of course, as Trump would say, billions and billions and billions. I don't know why he says it like that, but he does. Some people say more is being made on drug trafficking that is coming through Mexico. Some people say that the business of drug trafficking is bigger than the business of taking our factory jobs. So what I would like to recommend is, if we are going to have continued dialogue, we will work out the wall. They are going to say, who is going to pay for the wall, Mr. President, to both of us? And we should both say, we will work it out. So he's basically trying to loop in Enrique into his little scheme, into his little
baloney scheme, yeah,
into his lie about the wall. So, okay, here's what we're gonna do. You're gonna say some things, I'm gonna say some things, and both of those things, they will be the same. They are going to say, who is going to pay for the wall? It will work out in the formula somehow, as opposed to you saying, we will not pay, and me saying, we will not pay. God damn it. You know, this is so weird how they have cleaned, the White House has cleaned up Donald Trump's language and the way he speaks and interrupts himself and the way he informally uses language. And I'm not saying that's even a bad thing to use, obviously not to use contractions and to interrupt yourself through in the middle of a thought to continue another thought. Something like that is something that's completely in keeping with Donald Trump. They have completely sanitized this. Can you imagine Donald Trump actually saying out loud, because you and I are both at a point where we are both saying we are not to pay for the wall? That seems almost poetic in a way. You know, it's strange.
Yeah, I mean, when you read it out loud and you read it that way, it definitely sounds disjointed. He speaks in a totally different kind of disjointed
but
way.
So, I guess what I'm saying is he would normally say, we're not going to pay for the wall. That's kind of what he's implying here in this language. Instead, he says, we are not to pay for the wall.
And then yeah, something is weird with the transcription of it.
Sounds
sure.
Really weird. From a political standpoint, that is what we will say. We cannot say that anymore, because if you were going to say that Mexico is not going to pay for the wall, then I do not want to meet with you guys anymore, because I cannot live with that. I am willing to say that we will work it out, but that means it will come out in the wash, and that is okay. But you cannot say anymore that the United States is going to pay for the wall. He's basically giving orders to the Mexican president. Like, here is what you are going to say. He feels like he is in charge of everyone. He thinks he's in charge of Congress. He thinks he's the boss of the American people. It sounds to me through this transcript that he sounds like he's even the boss of the president of Mexico.
Yeah, I mean, as you read it, I'm thinking, oh, maybe there's not contractions because he's saying it like, you cannot. Like, he's adamantly saying,
we
will not, we cannot. We will not. Like, the way that he's saying it, is he's being emphatic about it, and you're reading it in a very casual tone.
Yeah.
It's entirely possible he got heated, because we've seen that from him, and especially behind closed doors.
Yeah,
so maybe there's no contractions because he spoke in a very angry, declarative tone.
Well, yeah, and of course, what he's revealing here is that the whole idea of the wall and Mexico paying for the wall is all a big scam.
It was never a thing. Mexico always said it was not going to pay for the wall. He made it up. And he's like, people say. Well, people don't just say. Like, you said it on the campaign trail. Who's going to pay for the wall? People yell, Mexico. Like, you created that.
Yeah.
You actually created this jam you've now gotten yourself into.
I know. It's
so to pretend that this automatically, magically appeared, and now you got to make it happen. Like, dude, you created it.
Right. He's invented this whole BS thing with building the wall and making Mexico pay for it. Now he's trying to get the president of Mexico in on the joke, on the scam. Yeah, like, please go along with me, because if I reveal that this is all bullshit, everyone's going to hate me then. So please help me out here, President Nieto. Enrique, can I call you Enrique? It doesn't matter. I'm going to call you Enrique anyway. So that's the way this works. He continued on here to say, they are sending drugs to Chicago, Los Angeles, and to New York. Up in New Hampshire, I won New Hampshire because New Hampshire is a drug-infested den, is coming from the southern border. That's an actual quote from this.
He didn't win New Hampshire.
Well, he won the New Hampshire primary. Maybe he was talking about that. Did he win the New Hampshire primary? I don't even know if he did. I'm going to look that up.
You going to Google that?
New Hampshire primary.
Well, while you're talking about that, the drug problem in New Hampshire is primarily opioid and prescription drugs.
Yes.
And that is actually an overprescribed. That's an issue that's coming from the
pharmaceutical.
Yeah, there you go. The mechanism that people are being overprescribed and then they're being recirculated through the community.
Yeah.
And it's actually he had a forum at the White House where they had a bunch of experts on this come and talk to him about the problem. And they explained to him that this is within the pharmaceutical system, within our healthcare system in the country. Mm-hmm. And he goes, yeah, so they're pouring over the border. And they were like, no, like they actually told him to his face that this wasn't a border issue, that this was a problem with how our healthcare system operates and the overrun of of prescription drugs, and he didn't hear it. And here we are months later, and he's regurgitating the nonsense as if it's factual to
That's
the
right.
president of Mexico, who knows it's not true.
Exactly. And I'm seeing here that he did win the New Hampshire primary. So maybe that's what he was talking about, but he was talking about the general election. No, sorry. No, he didn't win New Hampshire in the general. Okay, so there's that. There's the Mexico part of it. And I'm really fascinated and interested to see how Fox News and AM Talk Radio handles that bit of information. Certainly the pro-Trump internet as well. See how they handle that bit of information. That the
it's all fake news, Bob.
It's all fake news. But you know
we
what?
We don't know this transcript's true. He didn't even talk to the president. How do we even know he talked to the president of Mexico?
But
we don't know.
I mean, that's the weirdest thing about all of this. This entire era is that most Trump supporters don't give a crap whether or not Donald Trump's lying. You know, they know and they have in fact confessed to the fact that Donald Trump, you know, embellishes and yanks stuff out of his ass. That's just, I think they've come to the point where they accept that and they like him anyway.
All politicians lie. Didn't you know that?
That's right. Didn't you remember Barack Obama said 58 states? That's always the troll reaction I get.
Yeah, if you like your plan, you can keep your plan.
Yeah.
They all lie.
They always go back to that one. Okay, so we also have this transcript from this call with Malcolm Turnbull. Here are the five craziest moments from that call. Number one, Trump says accepting refugees from Australia will make us look awfully bad. Trump's call with Turnbull came the day after the U.S. president signed the first iteration of his travel ban. And it centered around an Obama-era deal that America would accept just over 1,000 refugees from Australia. Quote, I just called for a total ban on Syria and from many different countries where there is terror and extreme vetting for everyone else. And somebody told me yesterday that close to 2,000 people are coming who are really probably troublesome, Trump said. And I am saying, boy, that would make us look awfully bad. So weird. So, yeah, okay. Number two, Trump says the refugee deal is going to kill me. This is going to kill me. I am the world's greatest person that does not want to let the people into the country, Trump
said.
Who
says I am the world's greatest person? Who says that?
I don't know.
Who says you're not even like the world's millionth greatest person.
I know. I am the world's greatest person that does not want to let people into the country. Maybe he's saying that among the people who do not want to let people into the country,
he is least despicable of them all.
He's the greatest of those people.
I don't know.
And then he said, I am agreeing to take 2,000 people, and I agree I can vet them, but that puts me in a bad position. It makes me look so bad, and I have only been here a week, he continued after receiving a reminder from Turnbull that the agreement is for 1,250 people, not 2,000. Yeah, what a Biff, you are an idiot. Number three, Trump says refugees are not going to be wonderful people who go to work for the local milk people.
Oh, Magoo, you done it again.
See, now this is Trump. The other transcript is cleaned up Trump.
Yeah.
This is real Trump. I guarantee you they are bad, Trump declared before noting. They are not going to be wonderful people who go on to work for the local milk people. The local milk people. You know the local milk people, right, Jackie? All those local milk people.
They come to my door. They drop the milk off at my door. They come and get the bottles the next morning. What century does he live in?
I don't know. The local milk people. Number four, Turnbull informs Trump about the Boston bombers. This is weird. Explaining to Trump where the refugees came from, the U.S. president asked for a guarantee that if there are any problems before claiming, you know, that is what they said about the Boston bombers. They said they were wonderful young men. Turnbull replied to that the Zharnev brothers were Russians. They were not from any of these countries. They were from wherever they were, Trump responded.
They're from wherever they were.
Right.
He doesn't just bother to learn.
Wherever.
They're all bad. They're not rich white Americans. They're all bad.
Trump says, this is the most unpleasant call all day, and hangs up. Yes, because Turnbull isn't going to tolerate any of Trump's bullshit. He's just letting Trump know that, you know, correcting him about the number of people and so on, about the Zharnev brothers. So, of course, this pisses Trump off. Trump continued to deride the refugee agreement, calling it a disgusting deal and claiming, I will be seen as a weak and ineffective leader in my first week by these people. Then after Turnbull said, quote, you are going to stick with it, the U.S. president declared, I have had it. I have been making these calls all day, and this is the most unpleasant call all day. Putin was a pleasant call. This is ridiculous. As Turnbull thanked him for his commitment, Trump said, it is an embarrassment to me, but at least I got I got you off the hook, and ended the call. So that is the extent of
that's great.
Trump's statesmanship. Hell of a guy. Hell of a nice guy.
There's a reason why this stuff's getting out. Like, somebody believes that he's a real detriment and a real danger to this country.
That's
right. They really do. Like, somebody in, on the inside is, like, sending us, like, help me notes. I mean, that's what this is.
Yeah. Yeah,
somebody's
absolutely.
Like, you need to see what's going down here. I mean, we all know. Everybody on the outside who's fighting against this administration knows how bad it is.
Mm-hmm.
But somebody on the inside is trying to get the Republicans on board.
Yeah,
and is trying to say, look, this is worse than you know. Like, this is an embarrassment on every level. Somebody stop this. Like,
well,
that's what's happening.
You know, there's a theory about that, and we're going to talk about that right after one last break. Back with more show right after this.
You can't always get a clean you can feel good about inside and out unless you're using Bubble Genius bath and body products. See, Bubble Genius is a woman-owned small business proudly creating our vegan-friendly products in America and supporting other U.S. businesses by buying our ingredients and supplies from them as often as possible. Plus, you'll be hard-pressed to find packaging as recyclable as ours. Visit BubbleGenius.com and check out our cause-related items too, like our global warming soap and a lot more. We donate our proceeds for those items to worthy causes, like organizations combating climate change and mountaintop removal mining. Good stuff like that. We also send our products to the troops overseas through our Buy a Soldier a Shower campaign. Because the least we can do is keep them smiling and smelling great, right? So visit BubbleGenius.com and feel good and clean. Bubble Genius, doing our part to make the world a better place, one bathtub at a time. That's BubbleGenius.com.
Bob Seska.
This is the Bob Seska Show, presented by BubbleGenius.com.
Thank you, Buzz. Make sure to support the show at Patreon.com/Bob and Chez. Best way to do that is go to BobSeska.com, and just beneath the logo, you'll see a link for our Patreon page. Just go there and do that. Got the postmortem show coming up in just a few minutes. And you can get that at our Patreon page. It's great, right? Okay, so moving along here. I almost forgot to mention, Jackie, you're working on a new project that I almost completely forgot to mention this. It's called InvestigateRussia.org.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about that.
Well, I'm really excited about it. So I think what's happening is that there's a lot of information coming out about the Russia investigation. We just heard today, obviously, that Mueller's convening a grand jury. But there's all of these stories that come out, and we hear them in a very disjointed way. And there's a lot of amazing reporters who are doing really good investigative work. So the people I'm working with and I have decided that we want to create kind of a repository for all information pertaining to Russia and the Russia investigation.
Wow.
And we're coming at this from a very apolitical or bipartisan way. This is not going to be progressive or conservative or liberal or Democrat, Republican. Like, that's not what we want. We really want it to be about America and protecting our country from what Russia has done and will continue to do. And so it gives you, the site will give you not only the latest stories and updates as they're breaking in a daily newsletter, and we'll have a podcast and all that good stuff, but it also has all the background. So you can go to the site and it's kind of a one-stop shop for who are all the key players and what are the investigations that are going on and the latest developments, and then the history of like what Putin wants and why he wants it, and the history of U.S.-Russia relations in the context of all of this, and the cyber hacking timeline. And so it's one spot, and we're going to take kind of the best of what's out there and we're compiling it into one resource so people will have a place to go. And I thought about this in terms of when I was invited to participate in this in two ways. One is that you read these stories and you think, oh, who's that person? Or how are they connected? So while you're reading along, you'll be able to go to the key players and be like, oh, okay, that's who he is.
Oh,
right?
Wow.
So it's all in one place. You won't have to Google it. It'll just all be there.
Yeah.
And we're doing this from a very strict journalist. Like, everything's checked, and we're trying very hard to be, like, super down the middle on it, so it doesn't have a tinge one way or the other. And then the other portion of it that I thought was important is that those of us who were super concerned about the domestic agenda, like healthcare and climate change and immigration and all of these policies, like, it's all being thwarted by a man who was helped by Russia.
Yeah.
Like, there's a method to this madness. Like, Putin is trying to undermine democracy for a reason. And all of the things that we care about are not going to actually evolve until we solve this problem. Like, mm-hmm. this is really at the crux of everything that we're losing right now.
Yes.
So understanding it, continuing to fight for what we want to fight for, but understanding what happened and why it's so important, and trying to push Republicans who are in a position to help to get some pushback from their own constituents. Because I think the Democrats at this point are pretty much on board.
Oh, yeah,
But trying to get people to understand that this isn't about party. This is about country.
Exactly.
So
yeah.
That's what we're creating.
Yeah, I mean, I get the sense that the Democrats are on board. I get the sense, though, that some Democrats haven't really prioritized it the way it should be prioritized.
Well, it's hard to prioritize. It is. I mean, I've been spending all this time now reading and compiling and writing and doing all this research on it, and it's deep and it's complicated and there's a lot of players. But I mean, gosh, if the dots don't connect themselves. I mean, it's all so shady and there's so much information circulating. And when you start to read it all together in this context of one narrative where you start to understand how it all interconnects, it's really obvious.
Oh, yeah, like, yeah.
You got to be deaf, dumb, and blind to not see how this has come together and why this is such a big deal. So hopefully that'll be what this site will do.
Along those lines, you can have like a timeline of how
yeah,
all of, the,
all of it.
Are,
all oh of it. God, timelines, maybe. Infographics. It's comprehensive. And it's being written in a very accessible way. I want people to come and feel like they have a grasp of what's going on. Because I've read, like, for example, a timeline of the cyber hacking, right?
Yeah.
And you read it and you're like, I don't know what these things are. I don't know who these groups are. I don't understand this terminology. Like, you can click on it and there's a definition. And you're like, oh, okay, I get what that is. And it's written in a way that's accessible, that people can understand. Not dumbed down, but just accessible.
Yeah, you know, one of the things that I find myself getting confused over, just remembering back, because there's so many events to kind of enter into my database, my mental database, and that is the difference between a story getting reported in the press mm-hmm. and then getting confirmed officially later on. Like, it seemed like we knew last summer that the Russians were intentionally helping Donald Trump, but that wasn't officially confirmed until I think after the election. I think that wasn't confirmed until like December 9th. But I think for most of the rest of the year, we were talking about, yeah, this is all specifically because there's a series of layers to how mm-hmm. the story built up. First, it was we have this hack of the DNC,
right.
and then we find out that maybe Russia was behind the hack of the DNC,
right.
And then from there you have the next layer of Russia was behind the hack of the DNC and they did it in order to help Donald Trump,
mm-hmm.
and then from there after that the next layer is. And then there was collusion between the Donald Trump campaign and the Russians over all of this material. And then you add in all of the, you know, the malware and the social media disinformation campaign and the trolls and the bots and so on. And it gets thicker and thicker and thicker mm-hmm. as you move forward. Because I always thought that was an interesting, like a series of concentric circles of details of this story adding on and on. And that was just what we were getting through press reports. But some of that hadn't been confirmed until there were official reports from DHS and from the FBI. And then, of course, from the White House, a little bit too little too late after the election had already taken place. Official confirmation from the investigations that Trump was, you know, that this was all about helping Trump and that Trump was possibly involved.
Yeah, and what's cool about what we have the opportunity to do now is to put some of this stuff in a chronological order.
Yeah.
So you can understand it in the way that it broke down, and you can see kind of where we are in terms of what information came out and what we knew and then what was confirmed. You're absolutely right. It makes it a little clearer being able to look back on it a little bit. And look, mm-hmm. this is a marathon, not a sprint, and we know that, right?
Yeah.
I mean, we can certainly hope that Mueller's going to get to the bottom of it sooner rather than later, because we'd like to preserve our nation as we know it.
Yeah.
But it's going to take a while. And so we know things will continue to unfold. But the idea is to take a look at this not as a let's get Trump, because frankly, Trump's going to do himself in. I mean, it's inevitable, right? Yeah. It's not an attack Trump website. It's an opportunity to look at how Russia operates and why. I mean, everything from the relationship with the oligarchs and how that came about and why that's important,
yeah,
to who the business interests were that invested in Trump properties and how that possibly was a vehicle to launder money. I mean, it's amazing what's coming out of this and the kinds of people that are involved in this. I mean, these are not nice people. To which my boyfriend said, "Are you going to get poisoned?"
Yeah, I mean,
why
better
do you
watch
say
out.
That? Here, taste my food. Yeah, better
watch out for hacking. I was just talking to someone who was telling me about. There's a Democrat running against. It was Jody Hamilton was telling me about how she knows someone who's running against Dana Rohrabacher.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like,
name comes up often.
But I was like, well, Dana Rohrabacher's totally in the bag with Putin. Mm-hmm. And I said, Jody, tell your friend that he's going to get hacked by Russia if he's not careful, because they're certainly going to try.
Rohrabacher comes up often. That name makes a frequent appearance in the material that I read about.
Yeah, and I'd only vaguely heard about his involvement with Russia, but then it was really kind of confirmed when Kevin McCarthy made that joke about how Putin pays Trump and Putin pays Dana Rohrabacher. It's just such a random name that indicated to me that there was a lot of truth to Kevin McCarthy's alleged joke. You know what I'm saying? Before we wrap up the show, a couple of additional Trump-Russia things that we heard about just in the past 24 hours. The Judiciary Committee is working on a bill to shield Mueller from being fired by Trump.
That's good.
This is a great idea, Jackie, because one of the things it does is very similar to the sanctions bill. This will paint Trump into a corner. Because he's not involved, because he's not engaged, he doesn't understand how this crap works. He allowed himself to get painted into a corner on the sanctions bill and had no choice but to sign that sanctions bill, despite the fact that he, you know, stomped and threw a tantrum about it the day after. But this will also have the same effect, where he is not going to be able to, because I imagine this is also going to get overwhelmingly bipartisan support. In fact, it's been introduced by a Republican and a Democrat. I think the Republican, in fact, is Lindsey Graham.
Oh, really?
So this will shield Mueller from being fired by Trump, and Trump will have no choice but to sign it because, again, it's going to be veto-proof.
Okay, that's good.
I'm just speculating. I don't know. That's not in the story that it's veto-proof. I'm just speculating that it will be because Robert Mueller has a stellar reputation among, you know, members of both parties.
Right. They're trying to make sure he's protected, which is good.
Yeah, exactly. And meanwhile, I said before that Trump officially signed that sanctions bill, I didn't think he would. I thought he might try some sort of pocket veto maneuver where he just sticks it in a drawer and then after 10 days it becomes law anyway. He doesn't have to put his name on it. But he went ahead and signed it, which I think was the only...
And then trashed it.
Yeah, the only other thing he could do. Yeah, and then he trashed it, which was fascinating to look at. It was fascinating to look at both of the statements, the official signing statement that came out that had all the technical things about how it's unconstitutional that the Congress is trying to box Trump in on negotiating in terms of sanctions and things like that. And then he's got his own signing statement in which he does his whole Trump thing where he doesn't attack Russia. Well, he kind of does a little bit. He does a little bit, which is kind of shocking to read, given that he's been talking about how Russia, the whole Russia story is a hoax invented by the Democrats. He said here right in the first paragraph, "I also support making it clear that America will not tolerate interference in our democratic process and that we will side with our allies and friends against Russian subversion and destabilization." That's a pretty big deal. I mean, overall, it's not... You know, it's not everything.
I feel like somebody snuck that in. He didn't see that.
Someone snuck it in after the fact. That's true. But the last paragraph is the funniest one to me. "I built a truly great company worth many billions of dollars. That is a big part of the reason why I was elected. As president, I can make far better deals with foreign countries than Congress." And that was...
I know better than the generals.
Right.
And the local milk people.
All the local milk people. All right.
Splotch is my favorite word today.
Splotch is definitely the word of the day. Okay. Maybe even the title of the show. Who knows?
Splotch.
All right. Anything else, Jackie? I don't know.
I don't know. By the way, after show it.
Felix Sater is cooperating now.
Ooh.
Which is...
Well, he cooperated once before and got him out of some trouble, so...
Yeah, I mean, that's how it's all going to come down. There's going to be...
Someone's going to squeal.
And it's going to be more than one person. There are going to be many John Deans in this story, I'm sure. Other than we also heard today that Mark Kasowitz represents a Russian bank.
There's no surprise there.
Trump's easy on the eyes lawyer.
I'm
razzing Kimberly Johnson. Kimberly Johnson on the show the other day said...
Who does she think is attractive?
She said Mark Kasowitz is not a bad-looking guy.
Oh, now I got to Google him. I don't know what he looks like.
Well, he's not.
Oh, okay.
So I gave her some crap over that.
Is he as hot as Stephen Miller? That's the question.
Yeah. They're both fours. I would say they're both fours.
A solid four.
If I was ranking them, I would say they're both solid fours. All right. That is the show. Postmortem show is coming up next. We may talk a little bit about healthcare. There's a couple things happening with healthcare right now. And, of course, we've got Jackie Schechner with us, so we have to talk about healthcare at some point. That's coming up on the Postmortem Show. That's at patreon.com/Bob and Chez, or the better way to get to it is just go to bobseska.com and click the Patreon link there. $10 a month gets you, $5 a month gets you two Postmortem shows a week. $10 a month gets you two Postmortem shows plus the after party. $15 a month gets you all that stuff plus an unbleeped commercial-free version of this show.
I should curse more.
Yeah, I know. I threw in a few today that I'm
gonna
have to...
I didn't realize that was a perk.
Yeah, you know, but it's such a hassle. It's like a double-edged sword. I like to swear all the time, but then
I
have to...
But I make more work for you if I do?
Yeah, then I got to go back through and bleep everything. I don't have it like the Stephanie Miller show has, where she's got the bleep that's just part of one of her buttons.
You need a bleep on the fly.
Yeah, I know. I can't... I'm incapable of bleeping on the fly. It's always been a hang-up with me. I've never been able to do it. I've always wanted to. All right, Postmortem show's up next. See you over there, folks. Bye.